Well, now calls for video games to be protected as new research suggests almost half of games analysed meet the legal definition of gambling. This is this business of loot boxes. Massey University Senior Psychology Lecturer Dr. Aaron Drummond is calling for the regulation of the loot boxes, which have a real-world value. They are a common feature of popular games. It's a prize gamers purchase with real money to give them a competitive edge or more features in a game. The content of a loot box can be random, like a lucky dip. You don't really know what you've bought until you've paid for it. Gamers are spending increasingly more and more money on them, costing a little over $4 each. In 2018, loot boxes generated $30 billion worldwide. It's predicted that will rise to $50 billion in under 2 years' time. A particular concern is the access of children and younger gamers to the loot boxes and their appearance before their eyes on their screens. Dr. Drummond's research shows 45% of games he analysed meet the psychological criteria to be considered a form of gambling. And Aaron Drummond's with us. Aaron, hi.
Good morning.
Can you explain a little bit better than I did how these loot boxes fit into the games?
Yeah, so loot boxes are kind of put into the game in a way that when you go to play a game, you're going to be asked to purchase additional loot boxes. Now, sometimes you can earn them through just gameplay, but sometimes you're actually going to be purchasing them with real-world money using a credit card. And when you do that, you don't know what it is that you're going to be purchasing. You might get something that's highly valuable to you, or you might get something that is a lot less valuable to you.
So that's the gambling element. Do you have to purchase them, by the way? Can you continue the game without them?
You can continue the game without them, but of course it depends on which game you're playing as to how easy that will be. So some games do have something called, we refer to as a paywall, which is a difficulty spike that makes it hard for gamers to continue without having appropriate rewards to get past that. Or if they're playing in multiplayer games and they're playing against people who have better rewards, then they can find themselves outclassed and outmatched, and so they feel the need to purchase these items to keep up.
It's a critical factor that you can't just buy what you want, that it's a matter of luck as to whether you get the good thing or you miss out, in which case, like all gambling, the temptation is to have another go.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the interesting things about rewards is that we tend to think about rewards as being rewarding on every occasion that we do something, being very driving behaviour. But it's actually a counterintuitive thing where, in fact, when we just miss out on reward and we only get rewarded on every so often, that we tend to actually create this feeling that the next time might be the big win. And so that can create this situation where we keep trying and keep buying more loot boxes or keep paying more money for the next gamble.
Is there any limitation or age limitation on who can buy these loot boxes? Are kids doing it?
The answer is there's not currently any age limitations in New Zealand. There's kind of a little bit of a differential response per country. So some countries have outright banned loot boxes. Others have imposed age restrictions. Currently in New Zealand, we don't have any age restrictions on them. And many of the games that we analysed in our initial study in 2018 do kind of indicate that there is a large number of games for kids that contain loot boxes.
We spoke to you last when you were just beginning this research. 2 years on, what more have you learned?
So one of the most consistent findings that we've been able to generate through our research and some other research that's happening around the world is that there is a consistent link between problem gambling symptoms and people's purchasing of loot boxes, such that people who have higher numbers of problem gambling symptoms, who are more likely to engage in sort of gambling behaviours, tend to spend more on these loot boxes than people without such symptoms. And so that indicates to us that there is this particular problem with, a vulnerable group who are potentially overspending on this. The other issue, of course, is that we've found that adolescents have a stronger effect again. So the association between problem gambling symptoms and spending is much stronger in adolescents than it is among adults.
How were you able to get really good New Zealand data or information?
So we've done several surveys through what's known as Prolific Academic and also some of the other survey targeting tools that we have available to us, which allow us to get surveys off of people in New Zealand. And we're also running some in-person studies where we, you know, go and collect data from people either on campus in universities, if we're interested in university populations, but also we're doing some data collection with the average person on the street as well.
Have you been able to, from those samples, get a very clear picture on participation and particularly the intensity of participation in some of this in New Zealand?
Yes. In New Zealand, and I mean, this is kind of true for most of the countries we've looked at. We've also looked at the US and Australia. We tend to see sort of relatively low levels of participation for most people. But what is concerning is that where we see participation, we see this sort of small number of people who are spending very, very large amounts of money. So we regularly have people in our surveys report spending over $100 a month on this stuff, and some of them have reported spending over $1,000 a month on loot boxes.
Are you able to get information by age for the New Zealand sample?
Yeah, for the New Zealand sample, we do have some information by age, but we haven't been able to look too closely at that. That's something we're hoping to look at more in the coming year.
Let's look at perhaps one example of a loot box and a game that causes gamers to spend more, whether they're doing this hazardously or whether they're just doing it because it's part of the game. Could you give us an example?
There are a number of games where this happens. Lots of the sports titles do have games, loot boxes in them, which are often, you know, in the form of card packs, where you'll open these card packs and get a random sort of group of players or players to add to your team. So harking back to your earlier interview, you can actually get Messi in one of the card packs for FIFA Ultimate Team, for example. If a player has a particular kind of favourite football player that they want to acquire, they're going to be trying to chase those card packs in order to get the player that they're after.
If you're looking at harm minimisation here, how difficult is it for younger players to be able to buy this stuff? I presume you need a credit card?
Well, it's actually surprisingly easy because you do need a credit card, but on the other hand, many of the systems that we're seeing don't by default require the re-entry of credit card details. So oftentimes one of the traps is that parents aren't aware that their credit card details have been stored on systems. And what we have seen is that quite often they're not aware of the spending that has gone on. And once those credit card details are entered, then it can be very difficult. So one of the things we always recommend is that parents engage in using those spending controls that are available and ensure that their credit cards aren't saved on their console or PC.
In fact, we had emails last time we spoke from parents saying this had happened to them. Have you had one or two cases that are particularly worrying or indicative of what can happen?
Certainly, we see regularly kind of people talking about this in terms of the amount of money that's been spent, both from the standpoint of people who feel that they've spent money and then they you know, adults who have spent money and then say that they regret having spent it, but also from parents saying that their kids have overspent on things. And this is actually the subject of several lawsuits around the world at the moment in, say, Canada and the US.
What to make of the growth in revenue from loot boxes? Presumably that also accompanies a growth in gaming, which is hardly surprising given the way our recreational habits and online habits are changing. But what would you say of the trajectory that's happening with spending on loot boxes? I mean, it's lucrative, is one thing to observe.
It's certainly lucrative. As you said, it's estimated to rise quite a bit in the next couple of years to about 47% of revenue by about 2022. And so that rise in revenue is concerning to us. And I think the critical thing is, though, that we've seen that it's not really a sustainable business practice anyway, because where we've seen big problems is from gamers themselves saying that the way games have been monetized has not been appropriate. So we've seen, for example, the incident with Star Wars Battlefront 2, where people were very, very frustrated by the way that that game was monetized, and there was a significant amount of backlash. So I think key for us is we'd really like to see an ethical and sustainable business practice being implemented in gaming.
Why are the gamers objecting to it? Is it that they have to spend money, or is it also breaking up some of the flow of the game?
I think not so much the breaking up of the flow of the game. I think it's more the feeling that first they have to spend more money on the game that they've already sometimes purchased for full cost price. So you got to remember these games are kind of being purchased for between $60 and $100 for full price, and then people are feeling that they're being asked to spend yet more money once they're into the game. But the other thing is this randomness, like the idea that we're going to ask gamers to spend for something that they don't know what they're going to get. You can imagine doing that if you went into a clothing store and just being given a random jacket and you don't know whether it's going to look any good on you. I'm not sure that many people would accept that. And I think gamers are very similar in that regard.
So again, most at risk here are those perhaps with a predilection a susceptibility to a gambling habit. How much made in New Zealand, by the way, and New Zealand gaming industry out of loot boxes?
We don't have hard figures on how much is made in New Zealand on loot boxes. We know that game sales in New Zealand totals around $400 million. So assuming that we're seeing a similar kind of proportion of revenue from loot boxes that you see in the rest of the world, it's probably somewhere around $100 million that would be coming from loot boxes. Having said that, we actually have some great examples in New Zealand of New Zealand local companies who are doing excellent ethical practice, like Grinding Gear Games. And so we might actually see less revenue coming from loot boxes within New Zealand.
Very quickly, Aaron, do you think it's time for there to be regulation here?
I think at the moment the most important thing to do is to get more consumer awareness about what is happening so that people can make informed decisions for themselves. So I think increased sort of labelling to indicate, you know, through the OFLC labels, and increased public awareness campaigns so that people can make informed decisions are going to be really important. And so the OFLC and the Problem Gambling Foundation have been doing a really good job of sort of raising awareness, and I'd like to see that continue.
Thanks very much, Aaron Drummond of Massey University, who has a master and grant to keep ongoing this work into the role of loot boxes in gaming and indeed in gambling.